Money and markets, there are more signs everywhere of deflation. We continue in a period of what I would say is consolidation and pruning, and events are full of double binds. You're watching two dynamics. One is war versus quantitative easing. Sanctions kill the economy, and then you pump up the economy that you're killing with more rich monetary supply and quantitative easing. Of course, what it does is it radically changes in winners and losers than from what would happen if you were using a market economy. And the Russia-Ukraine situation is a very depressing example of this. We see a real G7 and particularly US-UK decision to bust Russia literally back to a rather isolated, balkanized, deindustrial non-threat. You know, Russia long-term is a threat. It leaves U.S. and Europe to grow closer and continue to lead in the face of the Asian growth. But what you're seeing is you're seeing the empire run around the world, and in Middle East, Africa, Russia, and Eastern Europe, the way they're competing is by basically creating chaos and busting places. And they're shutting down the economy in many places. So it's not a pretty picture. The other way you're seeing this double bind is interest rates versus financial repression. If we had a free market, then interest rates would rise and it would clear the market. It would throw a lot of the bad behavior out. Instead, what you've got is you've just got oodles of government central bank credit. And what that does is that creates all sorts of bubbles. And so what you do is you repress with lots of rules. We saw Janet Yellen in her interview with Christine Lagarde saying she preferred loose monetary policy and more financial repression. It's a political way to clear markets, and it's not my favorite way whatsoever. An excellent Deutsche Bank bond study out, only available to clients, describing, but you can see summaries of it up on the internet, describing the conflicting signals in the bond and stock market and saying how can the interest rates remain this low and the stock market be this strong? It's a very big question mark when you look at the debt overhang. So as we come into the fall, we're out of Labor Day. Let's take a look at what the markets look like. The U.S. dollar is at its year, you know, it's high for the year. It's up and away, trading above 84 and looking very strong, looking like it could potentially go much higher. U.S. equity markets are a critical point. Big question, are we finally going to get a long overdue correction or not? We're way overdue for a 10 or 20% correction. And a 10 or 20% correction is perfectly natural in a long-term bull market, which clearly we still remain in. The S&P dipped down below the 2000 mark this week. It's still up approximately 8% for the year. The emerging markets backed off this week. They're now up about 5% for the year. The long treasuries have been the star performer. Who can believe it? Who would have expected it? They're up about 12% for the year. Gold's falling back, looks very weak. It's only up about 2.5% for the year, and it looks like it could go much further down. In fact, one of the things you need to know is that, you know, now's the time to make sure that what you're holding is your core, because an investment position could lose a lot of value right now, and you want to make sure that you're only going to I don't think we've found a bottom, and you want to make sure that you're prepared to ride down to the bottom. Because we could see this drop more. The charts look very weak. Housing market is also weak. It's very much a local thing. So in the areas of the country where reinvestment is strong, it's doing much better than others. So it's not uniform whatsoever. All the commodities look weak. It's not just precious metals, clearly signifying deflation. Oil was up today, but it's been coming down and sharply cutting into Mr. Putin's revenues. Probably not a coincidence. Between the drought, weather problems, and the drop in agricultural commodity prices, it looks like farmers are headed into a very disappointing time at harvest time. Given the importance of the harvest to the economy, this is really going to compound the slow growth. Say prayers for the farmers in California. Latest announcement, the Sonoma and Napa wine country wineries lost over $50 million as a result of the earthquake. Several weeks ago, that news just out in the Wall Street Journal this week. The one sector that looks strong is, don't be surprised, defense stocks, whether the Islamic State, you wonder who's financing them, Russia, sovereignty in the South China Sea. It looks like there's plenty of economic interest promoting and profiting from weapon sales. As you know, I have deep suspicions about who's really financing ISIS and where some of Putin's strength is coming from. Big story this week is the battle for the net. We had it up on the blog. Check out our post on that if you don't know what it is. It's the ultimate in the pro-centralization control attempts. The FTC is moving to what some people call digital toll booths. Killing net neutrality is a political method whereby the dying extend their life, that's the cable companies, by killing that which is birthing and growing. And, you know, this is the danger of having big government in business. Everybody wants a monopoly, and the way to get it is to go to Washington and get them to engineer it. I think one of the things that is essential is it's very important to let state and local government compete openly and bust any private sector monopoly, because this is something that the accessibility and the cost of the internet should be much lower than they are. Tim Wu is the law professor who wrote the wonderful book Master Switch about the history of information technology. I have a review of it up on the blog, and I recommend it to you. He's the man who coined the term net neutrality. And he just finished losing the lieutenant governor race in New York, but got 40% of the vote, which is a remarkable performance. And it really puts him on the map as somebody to be considered for running for public office in the future. He was the running mate for Governor Zephyr Teachout, a Fordham law professor, another law professor. She also scored remarkably well in the Democratic primary. And I paid a lot of attention to that race for a couple reasons. But one, there's a clear message in their success in the primary, and you're seeing it all across the country, not just the loss by Cantor, but all sorts of races in Europe. And you're getting a clear message, and it's a very positive one, from the electorate, which is, you know, we are really sick of same old, same old. So what voters want is something fresh, and it's going to be very interesting to see how that message winds back into the leadership of the different parties. There's a piece I put up on the blog. It was an editorial from Bloomberg, which is worth noting, or an editorial-like comment. It's called Toxic Stew of New Technology and Old Hatreds in World Crisis. Let me just read you the quote from it. When you look at the world today, there are whole countries where there are 60% of the population under the age of 30, 50% under the age of 21, and 40% under the age of 18, Secretary of State John Kerry said at the State Department in Washington on September 3rd. We know that all of these young people in today's interconnected globalized world, with the media that's available to them, just look at the numbers in sub-Sahara Africa of young people walking around with smartphones. They don't have a job, they don't have an education, but they're connected, Kerry said. Connectedness without opportunity can be destabilizing. No kidding. One of the things that is happening, and I said to one of my partners earlier this week, you know, there would be times when the leadership would get together. They'd get together at the Bohemian Grove, or they'd get together at a variety of different sort of meeting places, and a decision would be made, and then suddenly some planning would be done, and all of a sudden you would see the same spin rolling out from many different institutions in the media, in government, in the financial sector, and you're seeing that now. And let's call that the millennial generation is being wooed. It's like somebody blew a whistle. You're seeing article after article about the sort of financial condition and future of millennial and young people. You're seeing all sorts of new financial planning, brokerage, and money management websites targeting the millennial generation. I've signed up for a whole bunch of them and are getting quite an education, sort of seeing what they're up to. The traditional brokerage firms are beating the drums and telling all their brokers and investment advisors to learn how to target and communicate with millennials. Shark Tank is announcing announced Shark Week. They're going to have a Shark Week on Shark Tank on every night with the best oldies for a week. The SEC has announced they're moving forward with crowdfunding regulations this year. My guess is they'll come out with preliminary and take comments and then come out with final. We'll see what happens. And now we have the CFTC just aligning and dropping one of their holds on one of the Job Act provisions. More on that on the blog. Part of this is you're also seeing single Americans now compromise more than half the U.S. population, and that's in part because of the millennials. So this is quite a production, and it's far from over. The surveys of millennials actually show that they're remarkably smart about finance. They don't trust credit card companies. They know that debt is dangerous. You know, student loan debt is a real problem. They don't trust the big banks. And if you look at a lot of the new pitches, it's all designed to say to them a whole lot of great stuff about, you know, saving and being responsible and prudent, but it's designed to route them all into the same systems. Oh, you can trust the digital systems. Give us all your data. It's really frightening. You can trust the financial system. Don't worry about identity theft. It's not a problem. It's very much don't worry and be happy. The reality is the millennials are much smarter than that. And so it's going to be very interesting to see how all of us can make the financial system much more understandable and much more accessible, and but help people understand, yes, how the Madoffs and the MF Globals happened and how to avoid them. One guy who has not figured it out, I put it up on the blog, but it was really because I wanted to address it. A professor from Boston, Lawrence Kotlikoff, did an interview with Greg Hunter about the SIP, Securities Insurance Protection Corporation, SIPC, and got it really, we call it SIPC, got it really wrong. He couldn't differentiate between Madoff and Stanford and what had happened in their cases and the average brokerage relationship. And it just goes to show you, because this is one well-educated, smart guy, it just goes to show you that navigating this system and understanding what's dangerous and what's not, where the risks are, is pretty tricky. And the problem is when you see the kind of systemic fraud we've dealt with, it's very hard to understand what you can trust and what you can't. So I sympathize, but although I have lots of criticisms, or I could come up with lots of criticisms of the financial system, Kotlikoff really goes overboard. New Jersey and Brazil's ratings got dropped, and it was, in a way, it's a very big uh-oh for me, because if you look at what's happening in New Jersey and the history of the pressure that the federal government has brought on the rating agencies, not to mention their culpability in the housing bubble, I think what we're seeing is real, you know, it's almost like the rating agencies have become an extension of, you know, the Treasury sanction game. If you watch the details of the different sanctions being rolled out on Putin and his team, they're very, very invasive, very ugly, very political. You know, it's very 1984. And to see the bond rating game get caught up in that, you have to be careful. And that's why throughout the financial system, when I look at ratings, I'm very careful to try and understand when they are reliable and when I just need to do my own independent assessment. More often than not, it's looking like we're going to have to do our own independent assessments. Speaking of ratings, more challenges in the municipal area. The banking regulators, both Fed, FDIC, and OCC, came out with new rules as to what banks could buy. It having to be liquid, it was fine for them to buy stocks and corporate bonds, but municipals were deemed not to be liquid. Now, this is a real slap in the face. It's basically taking yet another major step to lowering the cost of capital for corporations vis-a-vis sovereign entities, and or certainly state and local government. And it's all part of the move out of governments to corporations that we've been talking about for ages on the Salieri Report. But the pushback from state and local officials in an election year was has been extraordinary and loud. And I think the regulators are going to have to backtrack on that. But don't be surprised if, you know, they keep coming on those issues. Another rating matter, Yelp got court support to say that they could continue to manipulate their business ratings in exchange for money. Yelp is now doing everything it can to nominate itself for the most despicable internet company. But do me a favor, have nothing to do with Yelp. It's really, I don't know where they're getting their air cover from, but it's pretty formidable and it's a pretty despicable company. I put up the prayer that we put up every year for the anniversary of 9/11. I just want to note today is the anniversary of 9/11, and it's a time when we give thanks for many things, but one in particular is all the very brave people who've done extraordinary work to bring transparency to what happened on 9/11. So if you're interested, check out that prayer. It's at the top of the blog. Scotland has delivered a complete panic to the UK. They have a referendum today on whether or not they can split off and become independent. You see a whole ream of banks say they're headed out of Scotland and back to the UK if the Scots go along. So we'll see what happens. We should know the vote pretty soon. Up on the blog, NASA announced that it's building a submarine that can explore the seas, the oceans on other planets. We see an announcement this week. It's up as related reading in that blog post that the Japanese companies see their future in space. And I said to one colleague, well, I guess they've decided the game is up on Earth. There are no more profits here. They're out to outer space. And I think, you know, Dr. Joseph Farrell and I have been telling you that, and I think that's, in fact, the case.